C1S. Chapter 6. Science, Theology, Medicine. The Structure of the Christian Science Textbook. Our Way of Life. Number 1A.
Today we start with the sixth chapter in the Christian Science Textbook called Science, Theology, and Medicine. This chapter has been written at the very last chapter in 1891. Up to that point, Mrs. Eddy had more or less all the substance of the whole textbook except the chapter Science, Theology, and Medicine. And with the 50th edition in 1891, she added this chapter. So you see, we come here to a very important turning point in Mrs. Eddy's life, where she felt that something very important was missing in science and health up to that moment. And as a matter of fact, we will feel that this chapter is a very great turning point in our spiritual thinking and in our spiritual vision. And therefore, we cannot be aware enough of the important change that takes place with this sixth chapter. It has a special emphasis, and I would like to try, and I say try because I don't know if I will succeed, I would like to try today to pinpoint the turning point which takes place at this very moment. Mrs. Eddy starts her chapter with that well-known sentence, "In the year 1866, I discovered the Christ science or divine laws of life, truth, and love, and named my discovery Christian Science." God had been graciously preparing me during many years for the reception of this final revelation of the absolute divine principle of scientific mental healing. Now, we can see that she starts here really with her discovery, and it isn't surprising that in that 50th edition in 1891, when this chapter appeared for the first time, that it appeared as the first chapter of the textbook and not as the sixth chapter. Humanly seen, it looks to be quite normal and reasonable that she would have taken that chapter as the first chapter, because of a textbook we would expect that the textbook would start with the starting of the discovery, therefore with what happened in 1866 and what was the new revelation which she had got. Only much later, in 1902, when she made a great rearrangement of all the chapters in their order, she put it where we have it today, the sixth place. Within the matrix, in the place of Christ as Christ. It's the Christ science shown how the Christ science, from the point of view of absolute Christian science, translates itself as Christian science on the human plane. So we must consider, therefore, what was that which made her change the position of this chapter from the first to the sixth place in the textbook. This brings up quite a few fundamental problems, some problems which I would like to discuss perhaps all day today. And I hope you will not be too much disillusioned with me if I don't start today right in with the interpretation of a sentence-by-sentence exposition of the text. Because I feel that if I can first establish in our consciousness the standpoint of this whole chapter, from which it is written what it wants to achieve, if I can first give, so to say, the tenor of the whole chapter, the general atmosphere of the whole chapter, if I can establish that, then perhaps tomorrow we will have time to take that tenor and look at it more in detail through the first big subject of mind, which runs over the first 10 pages or so, and perhaps I may not be able to go further than that. So I would like to warn you not to expect that I will do the whole chapter, but if we can establish that today and tomorrow, just that overall tone, and with the application to the first subject, I'm quite sure that the rest of the chapter will be then very easy, and that we can take the rest of the chapter next time or the next 2 times in a way that is flowing easy and which does not need any detailed explication. Because today most of the students, if they can catch the standpoint of a chapter, especially within the matrix, they are able to interpret for themselves the text of the textbook. So, if we go back to the point of what this chapter really wants to show, I think in the middle of it stands Mrs. Eddy's big revelation, which she had in 1866. That revelation, perhaps, which she pinpoints in one of the sentences in this chapter, where she says that from the infinite one comes one principle, and with that principle its infinite idea, and then with that infinite ideas come those scientific rules and laws and the demonstration of it. So you have, so to say, a big hierarchy of power, which she shows that what she has seen is the infinite one, the one being, has seen that infinite one as a principle, and from that principle deduced the infinite ideas of that principle, and seen those ideas, those infinite ideas, in its scientific relationship as order, as laws, as rules, as system, and so on. So she presents in this chapter the infinite one, the one being, explaining that there is but one being, but not leaving it just there, but showing that this one being must be understood in its science. So here in this chapter one has a great emphasis, so to say, on the fact that her revelation, which she had, could be summarized in seeing that there is one being, and that this one being has infinite ideas, and that these infinite ideas can be seen and understood through its science, and that within that one being there is no evil. So let me just elaborate on this big point. It's a big point because it is a point which is uppermost in the thought of many, many metaphysicians all over the world. What was revealed, therefore, to Mrs. Eddy, really, we could see, is that being is one. What does it mean if we know something about the synonymous terms that being is one? Well, we know, therefore, from the point of view of mind, that you must have seen that this one is both cause and effect. That from the point of view of spirit, this infinite one is really the infinite one and the infinite reflection of itself. That from the point of view of soul, that infinite one is both the divine subject and the divine object. That there is no duality of subject and object. From the point of view of principle, we see that this infinite one, therefore, is both principle and idea. From the point of view of life, we will see that this infinite one is one individuality. That this one is not just a unit one, but an infinite individuality. An infinite individuality of endless combination and endless calculus of form and ideas. From the point of view of truth, we could see that this infinite one is one consciousness, namely the one consciousness of God, which has God about himself. And from the point of view of love, we can see that this infinite one really includes within himself all the ideas. So in this way we get a broader sense of what is meant when we say that being is one. But this one, as the one infinite principle, has an idea. So we mustn't consider just this infinite one as one principle, but really see that this one principle has an infinite idea. It's principle that has an idea. Therefore, a great statement that principle and idea is one. Therefore, and this one, she says, is God. Therefore, God is both principle and idea. If we look at principle from the point of noumenon, then we see him as principle. But if we look at God from the point of view of phenomena, we recognize him as idea. But it's always God, no matter if we look at it from the point of view of noumenon, or of phenomena, it's always principle and its idea. It's just like what Jesus said, that he said in John, he that has seen me has seen the Father. As if he would say today, he that has perceived an idea has perceived God. So, idea is really God in quality. It's not quantity, but it's still God, but only in quality. And it is because of this very fact that it is showing, that idea is showing God in quality, that the term idea cannot be capitalized because it does not mean quantity. And so we come to the true concept of principle and idea as noumenon and phenomena, as quantity and as quality. If we have seen that in Mrs. Eddy's revelation of the infinite one, which has but one idea, an infinite idea, that then we can see that therefore we have to stand on that standpoint that nothing is ever going on in being than principle and its idea, God and its idea. No matter what appears in the human, on the human plane, on the material plane, it is always fundamentally only God and his ideas operating. Now this is something which we have to see through clearly and specifically so that we don't have two universes, two beings, that we don't split up being in different stratas of being. There is only one thing ever going on, wherever it is, no matter if it is on the so-called spiritual plane of thought, if it is on the so-called human plane of existence, or in the material state of existence. Fundamentally, behind everything, existentially, there is never anything going on, and can never anything going on, but God and his idea. That's the fundamental point of the oneness of being. So if we consider ideas, then we can see that therefore in this infinite operation of being, viewed from the point of view of mind, for instance, we see that mind manifests itself only in ideas. That from the point of view of spirit, these ideas are the only reality there is to be conceived of, the only reality there is. From the point of view of soul, we see, therefore, that these ideas are our unchangeable identities of being, that they are really numerals of infinity. That from the point of view of principle, these ideas always operate within a calculus of ideas, within infinite relationship of ideas. That from the point of view of life, all that is ever going on is therefore the infinitely individualized manifestation of isness. That all that constitutes being are ideas. So that from the point of view of truth, we see that really ideas are conscious of itself. That the only consciousness there is therefore God and his ideas. So that from the point of view of love, we see, all right, then all that there is a state of fulfillment, a state of perfection of the ever-operative principle with its ever-operative system of ideas. Now, this is an exalted but absolutely practical point of view. We have seen that Mrs. Eddy perceived that it is not enough just to see that God is the Infinite One, but that the Infinite One must be understood in its science, or can only be understood in its science. That it is not enough to see that being is one, but we must also have a working tool, working instrument, in order to get hold of this oneness of being. And science is really that working tool by which we can understand what this Infinite One means in all its ramification and classification. Therefore, the oneness of being must be coupled with the sense of science. Science, which Mrs. Eddy presents as science on all levels of thought, science on the level of divine science, of absolute Christian science, of Christian science, science as a four-dimensional calculus of Word, Christ, Christianity, science really in all its categories, and classifications. If we have seen that, then this very fact is the explication of evil. It's the explication of the oneness of being, but it's also the explication of evil, because evil can only be explained from within that which is, and that's the Infinite One. Evil is not something that exists either inside or outside the Infinite One. It's not even outside, because there is no outside to the Infinite One. And because it has no existence within the Infinite One, it must be explained from the only standpoint it can be explained, namely from the Infinite One. Therefore, evil, viewed from the point of view of mind, has no part in being. We begin to realize that the explication of evil from the point of view of mind is the recognition that it is not belonging to the one being, that from the point of view of spirit it has no reality, that from the point of view of soul it is neither within nor without this infinite being, that from the point of view, say, of principle, that it must be explained from within the substance of the infinite as non-operative, or from the point of view of life as seeing that within that one being evil is that which has no existence, which depicts the non-existence. Or from the point of truth, it must explain why it is nothing, because truth is the only consciousness. So the only consciousness of truth is the very method of how to explain why we can't be actually conscious of evil, and therefore have no consciousness of evil, so that from the point of view we really see it is excluded and not included in the plan of love. Well, this is just a big survey, perhaps from our present point of view, what Mrs. Eddy somehow must have seen when she had her revelation in 1866. But naturally, the age in which she lived was not able to grasp what she has seen. Her students at that time couldn't lift their spiritual consciousness to that level where Mrs. Eddy was, and so could only somehow touch this enormous new revelation through infant ways and means. If we follow just in big lines the development of how the movement, not how Mrs. Eddy saw this revelation, but how her followers, I would say, could touch and approach her vision, perhaps we could see that in the so-called pre-Kimball period, I take Kimball, say, around the turning of the century as a waymark, that in the pre-Kimball period, the movement as a whole couldn't grasp this idea of the oneness of being, that there is only one being, and that this one being expresses itself in ideas, and that it is that these ideas operate in a coherent system. That was more or less foreign to that state of thought. And God was approached from outside of God, usually through thinking about God, through mentality. It was approached through very good human Christian qualities. The movement then didn't see and wasn't so much interested in the one being. What they were interested in was that it was explained as good and only good. This was so new and such a comfort to the age that God was explained as but good, and not as good and evil, but as good, only working out good, only expressing good, only having a creation of which is good, and all turned mostly around the term good or love. It was a sense of God as love, which only gives the best and that which is perfect. And so the demonstrations in Christian Science were largely based on the application of good human qualities through mental means and through a deep, sincere devotion to this new idea which they couldn't quite define and grasp. Then we know with Kimball came a turning point, and this turning point consisted in seeing that he was presenting the fact that principle, which is God, must be understood through the ideas which express this principle. He began to teach from God to a certain extent. And I say to a certain extent because the students mostly couldn't make that step from the objective to the subjective standpoint, from the approach to God standpoint to the taking the standpoint of God and looking out from God. They couldn't make that step which Jesus made when he said, he sat down at the right side of the majesty on high. What they were interested was, and what they could grasp from Kimball, was that being consisted of ideas. But what were the ideas? What were ideas at all? What was the form, the identity of an idea? And most of the thinking was therefore not that deductive thinking from principle to the idea, but was a thinking that was inductive from matter to idea. They were considering their material problems and trying to draw conclusions from the material object to the idea. So you see, they started with a negative situation, with matter, with material objects, with something that happened, and try to find the idea that must be existing in reality. Because they got as far as that they could see that all is idea. But they couldn't see how to reach ideas and how to define ideas. So that period was characterized constantly by questions of what is the spiritual idea of a material object, the spiritual idea of a table, the spiritual idea of a chair, the spiritual idea of a stomach, the spiritual idea of the heart and the lung, and so on. What was the spiritual idea of it? Because they knew all the spiritual idea, but how to arrive at that? And the reasoning were mostly done, instead of deduction from principle, was done by induction from material objects, by exchanging the objects of sense for spiritual ideas. Naturally, a rule which is quite all right if it is seen properly. And it can only seem properly when beforehand one can reason from principle to idea. Without that, the exchanging of objects of sense for ideas of soul can be very dangerous, can be a method that doesn't lead very far. Now, we mustn't forget that even at that time, Mrs. Eddy wrote in miscellaneous writings, God elucidates his own idea, wherein principle and idea, God and man, are not one, but are inseparable as cause and effect, if one, who could say which that one was?